One of the most memorable people we've had the pleasure of interviewing on the show is bodybuilder Christina Bruce, who, after transitioning, went from competing in men's bodybuilding to women's bodybuilding.
Since we first interviewed Chris, she moved to San Diego, started a career as a fitness instructor, got on a reality TV show, and is now living the nomadic life. But today, we have her in the home studio.
Listen as Christina Bruce talks about her experience competing in both men and women's bodybuilding, her appearance on the National Geographic TV series Taboo, and what are some of the most overlooked or overrated muscle building trends.
Plus, Chris talks about her intense training regimen, and for the first time ever, she shows us photos that no one has ever seen before, taken right after her surgery in Thailand.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Looking for the right t-shirt to wear during your workout at the gym? Check out our store at feastoffun.com/store for an incredible selection of t-shirts that'll show everyone you listen to the best podcast in the world. Visit feastoffun.com/store.
A lot has happened since we first had the pleasure of interviewing Christina Bruce, a bodybuilder who's not just transitioned once, but twice, from fit to fabulous. First, Christina became a 230-pound male bodybuilder, winning contests, and now she's a 180-pound female fitness guru, 6'4" in heels. Welcome to Feast of Fun, Christina. It's a pleasure to meet you in person.
Good afternoon. It's good to finally see both of you in person.
I know. You look fantastic, but you always have.
Thank you.
And I do miss saying Christina Fox Bruce, which is the name you initially were using when you first came on the show.
I did. When I was cross-dressing, it was kind of Christina Fox. I have no idea where that came from.
What was the fox? Because you were a foxy lady and
it was obnoxious.
It's just to be playful.
Being obnoxious. I honestly don't know where it came from. But the moment I decided this was going to go somewhere, yes, I did. I think when we first talked, it was Christina Fox Bruce. Because that was when I was doing the whole marketing, merging it together to get away, pull the fox out.
So still foxy, but no more foxy in the name. Now, on your Instagram, you have a quote that says, "I'm not telling you it's going to be easy. I'm telling you it's going to be worth it." That could apply to a lot of things in your life and not just being a bodybuilder, but also as being a trans woman as well.
What do you think it means?
I think it means everything. I think a part of it is what I've been really drawn to you initially was the fact that you sort of integrate your experience as an athlete and as a transgender woman into one synergistic whole. And I've always felt like bodybuilders and trans people share a lot in common, and they sometimes don't even realize it.
I completely agree. I mean, if you think about it, a transgender is the ultimate bodybuilder. Because you are transforming your body into whatever you want it to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that is the ultimate definition of a bodybuilder. You're starting out with this piece of clay and you're molding it to what you want to look like. And that was my whole goal.
And originally, like, your fitness journey began in high school as a football player.
Yes, I played football since I think about 10 years old. Played 12 years all the way through Little League to high school, then college and semi-pro when I finished up my last game. But throughout that body, I don't know if it was really bodybuilding, it was weightlifting because I needed to add size and strength. I played outside linebacker, so I mainly needed upper body strength. So the gym was more, in the beginning, it was for the football. And then it turned into, you feel good, you look good, and the girls liked it. So it made it a lot easier.
So like most people used it to get laid.
Yes, I did. And I still do today.
And so your passion for bodybuilding, and tell me about, like, because some people just do it because it looks good on them, or there's a happiness, there's a joy in building muscle. You fall in love with the act of weightlifting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I don't know if it's arrogance or if it's just that I know that it's the appearance. I mean, there is endorphins that kick in when you start. You know, I can tell a difference. I've been traveling a lot the past month. And so I would get to the gym for 2 or 3 days and I literally missed a week in between. And I can feel the difference that you get sluggish and you can feel lethargic from not being. So definitely the endorphins make a big difference in the way you feel. But some of it is, I mean, there's a quote I've said that skinny girls look good in clothes. fit girls look good naked.
Look good with the lights on.
And it's all true. Yeah. And so it's, and of course you, I mean, you take pride in what anything that you do. And when you spend that much time in the gym, you want to look nice. So it is, when you sit there and look in the mirror, I mean, it's satisfying to know the hard work you put in. Because anything in life, if it was easy, well, then everybody would be a millionaire. Everybody would have an amazing body. Everybody would have, you know, a successful business. So if it was easy, I guess that kind of what the quote that you were reading in the beginning, what it applies to. You know, I'm not telling you it's going to be easy, but it's going to be worth it. Mm. And most people are too lazy to put in the effort and the time that it takes on anything. And so I think that I was very blessed with a mother who taught me discipline, that if you want something bad enough, you got to go out there and get it. And between sports and my mom and football allowed me that if you put in the effort and you continue, you do not quit, you should succeed. And I guess that's just carried over in everything in my life, from football to bodybuilding to my businesses to even the transition.
Ronnie Coleman's famous for saying, you know, he was Mr. Olympia. Everybody want to be a bodybuilder, but nobody wants to lift no heavy ass weights.
Well, I do say a lot of times to my friends, I pick weight up to put weight down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pick weight up, I put weight down. It is hard, of course. That's, you know, the, especially back in the 80s when steroids were so big that it was, you know, you could instantly pump yourself up. Well, no, if you really know what you're talking about, steroids would help enhance it, but you still had to put the work in. I mean, it's like you just can't take it and pump up and get big. So most people do want the appearance, but no, they don't want to put the effort and time in.
And in some ways, you know, it's none of our business what an athlete does in terms of their hormones and their bodies. But you've talked a lot about this, about your steroid supplementation as an athlete and then as a transgender woman. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think a lot of times the reason people, they don't like it, or they want to say how bad it is to take steroids, is because they're envious. I mean, those people, they don't want to put the work in. And so that's why they'll say that, well, they look that way because of steroids. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to what I was just saying, that no, steroids just help enhance what you're doing. You still got to put in major effort and time.
But do steroids get a bad rap?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people do abuse steroids anything.
And that's why it gets a better, because you're absolutely right. There is a large percentage of the population. If you take, everything's on a bell-shaped curve. Mm-hmm. And you got 16% on one side, 16% on the other, and then you get the bell-shaped curve in the middle. Well, it doesn't matter if it's a police officer, it's an attorney, you know, someone, you got the bad apples. It's the same thing with that. They always see the 16% of the people who are abusing steroids. They don't see the other 70-something percent that take it properly, that know what they're doing, that everything from a proper cycle to actually a clean cycle coming off, when you use it properly, it's extremely beneficial, especially as a male gets older.
Well, and certainly, you know, GNC and all these sports nutrition places sell a bunch of like sugary stuff that's pretty nasty to your body as a, you know, supplements. And you know, you go to like YouTube channel or Instagram channels, and some young men and women who probably have not gone into any hormonal supplementation or steroids, they dismiss everything that they do as like, they're just juicing, you know, or they're, and then there's this obsession whether somebody who's the body they admire as natural or natty or not. And that's why I find it interesting in talking to you, because I find that the dismissing somebody who has a really good body as not a real bodybuilder because they're using steroids is in a lot of ways the same words that I use to hear describe dismissing a transgender person as not a real man or not a real woman because of their transgender experience.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I hadn't really thought about it to that degree. It still really comes back to, it's almost like I said, you know, labels are for clothes. I am Chris. What difference does it make? You know, if you don't like my appearance, if you don't like the way I look, whether it's a bodybuilder or it's trans person, well, whose issue is that? That's your issue. Mm-hmm. It's not my issue.
Sure.
So I put in the effort to build the body that I want, just like any other bodybuilder does. And am I trying to please everybody? No, I could really care less what anyone else thinks. I'm doing what I feel and what makes me happy. And I mean, it really comes in the day. If I'm not harming anyone else, what difference does it make?
It's none of our business.
Exactly. I mean, I'll be happy to help you.
I do appreciate the fact that you post and on social media and on Instagram and Facebook so much of your personal life that in some ways you kind of dispel the stigma and the myths surrounding both bodybuilding and being transgender.
Well, I think a lot of it is I realized that I was blessed in that when I walk into any room, I'm that thumb that sticks out. So I'm going to get the attention regardless anyway. So why not take advantage of my career that I'd had in the past of selling, and to try to use that to help promote in a positive way that this is who I am. I'm not saying that you have to accept it. I'm just telling you who I am, so that there are people who might be in my position right now that I was in 20, 30 years ago, and now they have someone who they can at least say, okay, well, this is possible, or someone that they can see that the turmoils that I've gone through, the successes I've had, the failures I've had. I mean, no, it's not easy. Again, it comes back to, I'm telling you, it's not easy, but it's worth it. If you're willing to put in the effort and the time, I promise you, if you're being honest with yourself. And finally, especially with the internet going on, people can be honest and they can see that, okay, research out there and find someone like myself, and going, yeah, this is possible if you're willing to put in the effort and time. And the only way that can happen is if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. If I'm honest about what I'm doing, whether it be steroids in the past, estrogen I'm taking now, the transition, the very good things that have happened part of my transition, and some of the things that, yeah, it's kind of a pain in the butt to deal with. But, you know, I accepted this when I started this path, and that's what they have to understand also. It's not going to be easy, but what I can promise you is if you're being honest with yourself, it's going to be the happiest you've ever been.
I just love that message. Yeah. I wish that everybody, more people could hear that. You know, that's why I'm so happy and thrilled that you're here in the home studio talking to us. Tell me about the first time that you took a step forward in expressing yourself, the woman that you are, in terms of cross-dressing, in terms of reaching out to transgender friends on the internet and actually being part of a community.
The first time I truly went out dressed?
Yeah.
Well, I had been, this was back in late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. I don't know if your listeners are going to remember the Yahoo groups when they used to be around.
Oh, sure.
So it was the Yahoo groups. They used to have cross-dressing and trans groups. And I had talked to many people all through the early 90s and even up to the 2000s. You know, off and on. And you would see the same cycles like we've talked about before, where trans people or crossdressers, and especially myself, is it's part of who you are. It's not going to go away. And sometimes you're ashamed of it. You're embarrassed. You're afraid of your job, maybe your married life situations. And it's not like an addiction, but it's just part of who you are. So you'll start to go. You'll accumulate clothes and makeup and shoes, and you'll maybe dress in different places, but then you feel ashamed and embarrassed and you purge and throw it out. So there's many people like that. And I would see that in the Yahoo groups. So all of a sudden, like somebody like myself, we'd be in there, we'd be talking for a while, and then they're gone for 4, 5, 6 months, and then they're back. Same thing.
Well, I found it's a binge and purge.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. Well, because society...
We actually learned about that concept from you the first time we had you on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
And when was the first show?
It was...
2010?
Yeah, 2010, in November of 2010.
I was still living in Dallas back then.
Yeah.
That's what, 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm. And you were telling us about the fact that you would accumulate a lot of women's clothes.
And, go to a hotel room, rent out a hotel room for the weekend, play dress up, and then never leave the hotel.
Yes. Well, my old career, I was in sales. I was a national sales manager. I used to travel all over the country. And so, yes, I would have my little stash, and I would sneak it into my carry-on, and I would be in the room, and I would put the clothes on, but I was terrified to go anywhere. Mm. And so I'd wear it in the room. I even have a few little pictures of taking it. And then it might last a week or two, maybe a month, and then I would throw it all away because I was afraid somebody would find out. I would get caught. This is silly. Why am I doing this? And so I would purge and throw it all out. And within 4, 5, 6 months, year at the max, I'm accumulating and doing the whole thing again. Mm. So it was a repetitive cycle.
And then finally you reached out to somebody online.
Well, during the different times, I had met two different people. There was a lady who lived right there in Dallas. Well, a lady, she was a crossdresser, and she had reached out to me about how to lose weight. She had seen my figure and just asked that she'd had difficulties. And just asked me, you know, what's the real way to really lose the weight? So I just explained to her about carbs and, you know, the best way to really break down. And she's very much a techie person. So she actually had this whole spreadsheet and sent it to me. And I'm like, I don't know what you got going on. I'm just telling you, do this and this and this. So she works on it. And she's like my best friend now. I was just spent 2 weeks that she just bought a house in Dallas. And I was there with her just the other week. But she had told me that, you know, it was able to concept in her mind that somebody was honest with her and talk about how to really lose weight. And she dropped like 30 pounds in a year very easily in comparison to what she never could before. And throughout that, we became friends online. And 4, 5, 6 years later, I decide that, you know, I'm ready to, I was divorced, to finally figure out what this is. I'm tired of being ashamed. I'm tired of being embarrassed about it. I'm tired of not knowing what it is. And I realized I used to occupy my mind. I would, you know that I had a plane. I used to fly, race cars. I was always finding something else to do, so I didn't really
you had an amazing life. You had a family. You had a really good job. You had money. You had all your dreams come true. You were in bodybuilding competitions, winning titles, and you decided to put all that aside in order to pursue your being a woman.
I just got tired of... It was not going to go away, is what I realized. Yeah. And yes, if you talk to my family or friends, I had the American dream. I did. I was with my girlfriend who turned into my wife for 20 years. We had two children. We had this huge house in Dallas. I actually, for my 35th birthday, I bought myself a brand new Viper. I mean, literally, it's everything that you
could ever... A Viper is a car?
Viper's a car.
Okay. Yeah, for people like a very fancy sports car.
It's about $120,000 sports car.
Damn,
girl, let's go for a ride.
So I literally did have everything that you could really want at 35 years old. I built up a couple of businesses, sold them, very successful. So, and thankfully, because of that, I've been able to take the last 10, 15 years now and do what I want to do. But what it really came to is I had all that, but I still wasn't happy. I was always finding something else. That nagging part of Christina Fox or Christina Bruce was not going to go away. And I finally just accepted that I need to figure this out. When I was 40 years old, this was still there nagging at me. I was like, you know, you've always done whatever it took to get to wherever you wanted to go. You need to figure out what this is, whether it's going to go away or not. And
what exactly is this, in quotations, that it is manifested in you? Because it's not just about being a woman, I think. I think it's also about being, you know... In talking to you and knowing you, it's also about being a giving person. Like you naturally, like somebody who's financially well off and expressing, you know, when we've met other transgender people who in the first steps of their year of their life, you don't hear from them. They disappear or they, you know, you spent a lot of time and energy being a personal trainer. And you didn't need to work for a living, you know, and it's like, and part of your personality and your sensibility is about getting pleasure, but from giving to others.
I think what, and you hit on a good point, my mom has brought up many times is that my mom and sister, when I grew up, it was just my mom, my sister and I. And she said that she always knew the soft, sensitive side of Chris, but no one else did. And she said, the difference is now that I am who I am, everybody sees who I am now. I mean, you know, I am a very caring person. It's like, don't mess with me. I will rip your head off. But outside of that is I am a very loving, giving person. If you don't cross me, you know, I will bend over backwards to help anybody.
Yeah.
And
I think that's also expressing in your sexuality, too.
Well, it's just once I'm finally comfortable being who I am, whatever it is, you know, whether you call it trans, male, female, I really don't care. I mean, that's your problem with what my label is. It's just the fact of when I get to be who I wanted to be and look the way I wanted to look and live life that I wanted to live without it being ashamed of it myself like I used to be, because that's why I would purge it. I was ashamed and embarrassed of who I was. And from the appearance, you think you have Chris, this alpha male that has everything, you know, that people were envious of, and realized I wasn't happy. And now I am happy. And so now that I'm happy, it's like I want to help other people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like whenever you have all these things, is what's life without sharing it, without trying to help other people? And not that I'm Sister Teresa sitting here on the corner, but when people are in fitness or things that I can do, I'm more than happy to try to help. Or I realize that my skills in marketing and sales in the past is something I could use as part of my transition is to tell my story. It's not I'm saying that you have to accept it. I'm just telling my story that so other people that are out there that might be in a similar position I used to be in can realize, you know, don't worry about what they think. You need to figure out who you are, because if they don't love you for who you are, then it doesn't really matter. And the people that once you're honest with yourself, that's the only time you ever start to be honest with other people. And then they can really see who you are. And then the people that come to you are the ones that are going to be honest, loving. I have met so many amazing people in Dallas, San Diego, even going back to Atlanta, now that I've changed, than ever before. And you find out all the people that used to be were frauds and you knew it anyway.
Well, and sometimes, you know, people that we love and are near and dear in our lives require a little education. We've had our whole lives to be us, and they have 15 minutes sometimes before we, you know, they don't have as much time to grow as we've had. And so I think as all LGBT people can, you know, a little bit of patience and reaching out and educating their friends and family can go a long way. One interesting thing that you've done that a lot of transgender people don't necessarily do is you've documented a lot of your surgeries that you've had, your breast augmentation, your general corrective surgery. Can you talk a little bit about going to Thailand and, filming yourself getting general corrective surgery?
I even have pictures if you want to see.
I can, yeah, sure. So let's see it.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, I saw some on Facebook, and I was just like,
no, you haven't seen these.
But these are graphic photos. No,
these are pictures that actually I was very lucky. My mom went with me over to Thailand. I had decided, even when I first talked to y'all, which we figured out was 7 years ago, I had just started. At that point, I had not had any surgeries. I had just come off a 6-month sabbatical for myself. That I decided I left corporate America. I was not going out down to the clubs in Dallas, where I was kind of like my training ground on dressing and getting out, just intermingling with the public. That all I did is I took 6 months and I spent with my kids that would come over. I went to work. I did the gym. That was it. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, you need to figure this out, Chris. This is ridiculous. You're 40 years old and you're still messing around about back and forth. So I took that time just to go, I'm just going to let my mind ease, quit trying to occupy myself and figure it out. And at that point is when I did, I was like, I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm tired of being ashamed about it. I'm tired of hiding from it. And that's when you and I talked. Within a month later, I had my first surgeries, had a little facial work, had my first breasts that were 400 cc's. And I was still working as old Chris at that time. And even then, I didn't know where it was going to go. And it just slowly evolved that I moved to San Diego. And when I went there, everybody only knew me as Christina Bruce that came out there. And so then it was just, that was the presentation I had. And I was living my life as who I am. And then I did the National Taboo series.
On National Geographic?
National Geographic. Yeah. They filmed after I did the bodybuilding contest as the first transgender person to compete as a male and then now compete as a female. Within a couple months after that, I decided, it was ready to make the surgery. And it wasn't that I had to.
It seemed very interesting watching the National Geographic special on taboo. You were listed as speaking of labels, as hybrid.
You're half like, man, I'm half woman.
Half woman. And it seemed
very
like,
sensational.
Were you seemingly like pulling their leg on that kind of thing? It seemed like you were had a little tongue in cheek with that. Because you were saying that you were very comfortable like that, but then yet a few months later, you decided to have SRS.
Well, I had, I know how to sell, and I knew what they wanted. And so it was good promotion. It was honest. I am a little bit, my size and my appearance looks a little bit, and especially back at that time, I had not had but one surgeries before then. So I did seem a little bit more of a hybrid, and I knew it was a good selling pitch. Mm-hmm. It sounded good. It was kind of what they wanted to go with. So I wasn't offended by it at all. I knew it was something that helped. All this is going to come back. Ted Turner one time said, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And it's absolutely true. I mean, even your mayor here says, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Right? When the hell are you going to get your roads fixed here? Good God Almighty. This is.
Tell me about it. But so you're going to show us your photos, or I don't want to come across Katie Couric and be like, let me see it or something. But
well, we have a relationship with, Chris.
And just for the record, for people who are listening, it's considered extremely rude to ask a transgender person about their genitals or anybody.
Yeah.
I mean,
you wouldn't ask your mom about her genitals, would you?
Or somebody said to me, it was like, you're really immature. You're, what is it, 5? And I was like, more like 8.5 inches, honey.
What a good day. Okay, my mom went with me. And so I had her take these pictures. No one has seen these pictures.
This is the you've shown this to any of
these were taken June 2012. Yes, I've seen them. My mom took them. She hadn't even seen them since then. So this was actually 7 days after the surgery.
Okay.
And can you describe people who can't see this? And we're not posting these anywhere.
No.
Describe what we're actually seeing in the photo so people
Well, what
can
you're seeing
see.
Is a close-up of my now genitals.
Okay.
And it looks like a gunshot wound.
Okay. Well, can I see? And so what I'm looking at here, it looks like your genitals have been stitched into a shape of a labia.
Well, you can hear.
Yeah. Can I show?
Yeah. You hold it that way, and that way you can flip through it, and you can see. And that's a week later. I know there's some that she took the day of. I couldn't find right there.
This looks, because of the stitching, it looks like a vagina dentata because the way it's been stitched.
Well, there's ridges
on the lips. Oh, wow. Okay.
And so
and then there's a picture of McDonald's.
Well, this was in Bangkok.
But you see this image, when you finally look down on your genitals and saw a vagina, a preliminary vagina, what went through your mind?
If it right after the surgery?
Yeah.
Nothing went through.
Or during the surgery.
Do they even show you this the first couple days?
No. Well, I have a mirror that I can stick down there, but at this point, it just hurts.
Oh, wow. What kind of drugs do they give you for that?
Vicodin.
Just Vicodin? No.
Well, I had a morphine.
No local anesthesia?
A morphine drip for about the first 2 days. Because you're in there. I had it done in Bangkok, which one, it was half the price of what had been in the States or in Canada. And the service was amazing. Plus, I went to Preacha, who he's retired now, but he has his three proteges that are doing there. He has taught the new inversion technique that pretty much everyone uses across the country, across the world.
And so just quickly to describe that, that's basically sort of taking the penis, cutting it on one side, and then
inverting
it into the body.
It's like gutting a fish. You take the penis head, you cut around it, pull the meat out because you're going to use the head to make the clit. And then you gut it like a fish, pull the meat out, sew it up, and stick it back in.
This one looks very structural and very art-like.
Yeah.
You know, this looks like a piece of art.
Earlier. Well, let's put it up.
It's a sculpture.
It looks like a sculpture.
Yeah.
Nice work. Wow.
And so... walk with me those first couple of months from the surgery and to looking down and you're looking at your body and it's now reflecting what you want your body to look like. But you've always throughout your life as a bodybuilder, as a trans woman, you've always had that experience. But now this is your genitals. This is the part of your body that you're giving you sexual pleasure. You're putting your sexual pleasure in the hands of another person and of a hospital to shape into something new.
In the beginning, it was, I planned on it was going to take about a year to even get back to what I look like. Because you think about it, you're literally cutting the whole entire of your crotch, ripping everything out. So the swelling that's going to happen in there and the damage is going to be done. I mean, I have pictures that I look at every once in a while just to show, even 9 months later, where I was bloated, swollen up just from all the damage that's going to your body. And I was eating well and starting to exercise after 2 months. Well, actually, before I even left Bangkok, I was in Bangkok for 3 weeks before I left. And after a week of the surgery, I'm starting to walk, getting up and walking as far as I could. The first day, it was just actually getting out of the bed and walking to the bathroom and back. And by the end of that week, I'm walking downstairs, the lobby and back. And then you had to learn how to, relieve yourself. And
how to pee.
Exactly, how to pee. Because once they've changed everything, now it's like normal. But back then, all of a sudden, I got to go. It's like, I didn't have a chance. There's been times in San Diego where I'm literally like walking with someone and said, I got to go, and I jumped in a bush.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like in the beginning, for the first about a year, it takes a while to learn control on the muscles because you've just basically removed everything and reorganized it.
So you're kind of like training to your body to release urine and...
how to control everything. Yeah. Everything from relieving yourself to orgasms. And then once the swelling went down and you have to dilate. In the beginning, you have to dilate 3 times a day.
And dilation involves putting a sort of a device into your vagina to keep
basically
it from...
A dildo. Taking a dildo. And then they give you these acrylic things, but I just went ahead and got a jelly gel dildo once it got to the point that I could put one size in with enough lube that you have to dilate 3 times a day in the beginning for about the first month or so, and then it comes to like twice a day, and then you can go down to once a day. And I literally did once a day for 2 years, every single day. And you have to lay down because you have to put a lot of lube because, of course, it's basically skin on skin in there.
Sure.
And you put a lot of lube, you dilate, you have to push it in there, try to, because your body's wanting to completely close the skin back together. So you're doing that. Then after about 2 years, you can go to, if you're not having sex with something penetration in there, which for me, you know, I'm only into girls, so that doesn't happen. I have to do it about once every 3 or 4 days now on there. So that's kind of something that you have to continue up with. But after about, I think, 3 months, I was able to have my first orgasm with it.
Did you have to learn how to have a new orgasm?
It was definitely different.
Yeah.
I learned, I got a couple different vibrators. And I remember, I mean, you think about it, especially as a male, I mean, you can get hard when the wind blows. So it's just a matter of at any time you can rub one out and you're good. Well, it's completely different. It's like you have to kind of like be in the mindset for it. Mm-hmm. If you're too frustrated or too whatever, you have to calm down because you have to get everything at a mindset that you're ready to get off.
You can't have an angry stroke.
No, there's no grudge effing here.
And so you have a very intense training regimen. I mean that's regardless as a female bodybuilder now, you're still competing. You're planning on competing. And the first, I remember in the news when the first competition that you did as a woman, there was quite a bit of controversy. Can you talk about that?
Well, it was controversy I developed.
You cultivated it.
Cultivated, much better word. Well, I mean, I was living into San Diego, and yeah. You know, I knew that, okay, if you're going to call, which news station you're going to call is a problem.
Fox,
exactly. So I called
Christina Fox. Knows where to go.
There you go. You got that. So I sent out some press releases to Fox 5 News there in San Diego that, you know, that this trainee was going to be competing in the bodybuilding contest, which I had approval because the first thing I did before I even started is bodybuilding is sacred to me.
Sure.
I've been doing it my whole life. And the one thing I will always say is every place that I've worked out, whether it's old Chris or Chris now, literally from Atlanta, Georgia to Dallas, Texas, San Diego, Chicago. I've worked out at all kinds of gyms. It's the one thing about people in bodybuilding is that is a true equalizer. You walk into any good gym and people that see that you're true about being working out, they don't judge you. I mean, I've always noticed that, even though it doesn't matter if it was black, gay, straight. I mean, back in the 80s, I worked out with.
But they do admire you, though. I mean, it's like if you see somebody who's really ripped or big, it's like you're always like.
But they respect it. They respect
exactly.
The iron.
That's
know
my point.
When you come in there and when you have muscles, they know that you did something to get them.
And this was even back, like I said, even back in the 80s when it was old Chris. I mean, I had plenty of people that, you know, it was not cool to be gay in Atlanta, Georgia back in the 80s. But my workout partner was gay. It was like people, honestly, if you're in the gym, now, they might not talk to you once you leave the gym, but in the gym, there was respect on the fact if you're absolutely right. It's like, if you could tell somebody who was true in what they're doing, they respected that part of you, that it was an equalizer in there. And so that's, I've never had an issue, even to this day, on any place that I've ever gone to work out.
Mm. And so, are you going to compete again?
I'm thinking about it. Yes. Yeah. The last time I did was, well, you were asking about the Fox 5. So I stoked the fire on the Fox 5 because I reached out to the promoter and said that I would like to compete. And I told him the situation because, you know, again, I respect that field and that sport. And I didn't want to denigrate it by any means. So I let him know exactly. And his response to me was, whatever your license says, that's the field you need to go into. Mm-hmm. And my license was female. And this was even before my surgery. So I, of course, competed as a female, and I wanted to make sure that we got some type of publicity out of it. So I reached out to Fox 5 about 2 weeks before the show, and there was a big interview about it. And, of course, they're going to get some other girl on there that's going to talk negative about it and how I have an unfair advantage, which was perfect. But when actually the show came, I couldn't have been treated any better. Mm. It comes back to what I was saying about is it is the real equalizer. I had so many people that came up to me at the show, whether they were participants or actually people in the audience who told me that they saw the Fox 5 interview, mm-hmm. they thought it was wonderful, that I was, you know, doing this and being myself and being honest. Everybody was more respectful than I was actually shocked how respectful. I didn't have one negative comment.
Well, I think you told us, you said about the other competitors in it, they're like, look at them. They have more testosterone coursing through their system than I do.
Well, I mean, it's true. If you look at any female bodybuilder, honestly, she's taking testosterone or HGH or insulin.
Human
or
growth
IGF,
hormone.
Yes, or human growth hormone, IGF, which is a form of insulin. I mean, there's all kinds of things that bodybuilders take.
Quickly, just for people who are not aware of this, testosterone accomplishes what exactly? It makes the cells do.
It helps with the nitrogen to help speed up the recovery of the repair of your body system.
Okay, it doesn't make you stronger; it just allows you to recover.
It makes you build muscle faster. Right,
you repair faster. Okay. I mean, they give it to anybody that's sickly, whether they have AIDS or any type of deformative disease that they're trying to breaking their body down. They'll give anabolic steroids. That's really what they started with.
They discovered that in the 80s because some of these bodybuilders living with full blown AIDS weren't dying as quickly,
exactly,
as people who weren't bodybuilders with on testosterone. And they were like, hey, why don't we just give all these gay guys who are dying of AIDS testosterone and see what happens? And so you had all these jacked up guys with HIV in the 80s and 90s. Insulin, that's usually for diabetics, right? To manage to digest their sugar. What role does that play in bodybuilding?
Well, if you use IGF is like an insulin booster. So it just helps break down the glucose to help its... It's repairing the muscle and adding size without as much going the anabolic way that testosterone goes, because testosterone can be very hard on your liver. Mm. And that's one of the things when we were talking about the abuse earlier, most people don't know how to do a cycle properly and to clean out in a cycle. And that's where you're doing a lot of damage to the liver. IGF or insulin can help alleviate that, but it's the same thing. People start to abuse it also, just like HGH. But it's a cleaner way of putting size in your body to help develop muscle by tricking your insulin system.
And then human growth hormone, which is famously in the news, Sylvester Stallone and Madonna are both regular users of it. What exactly function does that play?
Well, everybody has, like, when you, male or female, mm-hmm. when you just lift weights, especially legs, I mean, your own body makes human growth hormones. I mean, it's just what helps repair the body system. So, and especially early in the mornings when you wake up, as you get older, male or female, that starts to decrease. And so all you're doing is you're giving your body back a little bit because you shoot it into your stomach. You shoot it into your...
In the belly fat,
exactly. Instead mm-hmm. of being intramuscular. Muscular, it's subliminal.
Subcutaneous?
Yes, that's it. So it's going into the fat system, and it has a very short half-life. I mean, it's less than half of a day. But it helps on repairing the body system without going the anabolic side of the steroids like it does.
And so as a trans woman, you're taking estrogen, which is estrogen, the term catabolic, which means destroy muscle cells. Is estrogen catabolic?
I don't know that it necessarily is. I mean, it is going sure. to, I mean, you have anabolic, you have testosterone.
Anabolic means to build cells.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, you have, every one of us has testosterone, androgen, and estrogen. And
Every human being does.
Yeah. Just the different ratios. Mm-hmm. And for every female, well, male or female comes from your thyroids right there in your neck. And then, of course, the males come from the testicles and the females a little bit from the ovaries. So it's all the ratio that you have. I mean, you can look at a very feminine male, and not that he's taking anything. It's just his body naturally is producing less testosterone for the ratio of estrogen. Just like you could have a girl in high school who's never taken testosterone, but a little more athletic because her ratio of estrogen testosterone is lower. So it all, you know, it's all relative when we start out.
Because all this stuff is so powerful, the International Olympic Committee decided, I think it was like about 4 years ago, they codified rules for transgender athletes. So all this debate, like somebody has an unfair advantage, put that aside because it's been settled by the IOC, which is one of the largest and most powerful athletic committees or rule mm-hmm. organizations. And I think it's, I'm maybe getting this wrong, I think it's 2 years.
2 years, yes.
Correct, but, right?
After 2 years, it's 2 years that you've been on some type of replacement therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But... you know, if I'm going to sit here and be honest, I mean, let's think about it. At 40 years old, when I started my transition, I had built massive muscle mass. I mean, it was easier for me to reduce muscle than it was to gain it. So there is, it really depends on when you start. If you start before puberty, okay, it's a pretty even playing field. But if you wait till 30 or my age, 40 years old, well, I did have a little bit of advantage to build a larger muscle size easier than any female, even taking massive doses of testosterone.
So does that affect the judging and competitions? Do they... Like,
do they take that into consideration?
Points.
They say, well...
I honestly don't know. I mean, I know I was honest going into the show, and, you know, I don't know if y'all remember, like, I got second place. And mm-hmm. if you look at the girl that got first place, I mean, it was obvious that, you know, I was just happy that my whole goal was I wanted to go up there and represent Chris Bruce, and yeah. I wanted to represent trans people mm-hmm. professionally and proudly. And that was my whole goal. And I was happy with it. I was ecstatic with the results and the way I was treated and the way everybody there acted toward me. So the fact that I got second place mm-hmm. for the girl, it is what it is.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. I think it's interesting or maybe confusing to some people because, like, bodybuilding is kind of considered such, like, a very masculine sport because the women that do it sometimes come off looking very masculine, too. And so I think it's real. I think the word that I'm looking for here is it's a gender fuck for a lot of people.
Well, it's true. If you look and see, and this was even when I did this show 4 or 5 years ago, the bodybuilding, as far as females, is dissipated. I mean, it's mostly now it's the figure or fitness mm-hmm. where the girls, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get a career into modeling. And
sure.
To
so the fitness models.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's really what it's in. There's very few competitors really that are doing the female bodybuilding as much anymore as it used to be. But you're absolutely correct because they're all taking testosterone also. I mean, at the day of the show, the girl that competed against me probably had, truly, if we'd taken free testosterone tests, hers was probably higher than mine at that time. Yeah. I mean, I'm on testosterone blockers and taking estrogen at the time because I had not had my surgery, and I know she was taking tests.
I also recently came across a news article about in Atlanta, they had a bodybuilding competition for trans guys.
Really?
You know, and many people in different stages of transition, and I think it looked like there was like about 18 contestants. So I was pleased to see people taking an interest in bodybuilding after their transition. They have access to all that testosterone. Why not put it to use?
Double the dosage, bros.
Yeah, now I have a legal prescription to use it.
Well, and for a lot of us LGBT people, whether you're gender nonconforming or sexually nonconforming, we've had very negative experiences with physical fitness in your early years. And so I always tell a lot of LGBT people to reclaim that for yourself, because it's part of healing. It's part of growing as a person.
It'll also make you look better naked.
And, you know, and part of it is like we're fighting for diversity in sexual and gender, but also in body types. You know, large and in charge can be healthy and fit, too. You know, but just make sure that you are working with weights. You're doing cardiovascular and you're stretching and balancing yourself. That's ultimately, like, I think, what is the four tenets of fitness, right? It's strength, cardio, flexibility, and balance. And then the fifth one is meditation. And you're a big believer in that as well.
I am. And that started as part of my transition. Before my transition, I used to just basically go in and lift heavy weights. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started adding cardio to mine, mainly because I wanted to lose weight. I mean, when I started my transition, as you were talking about earlier, I was 230 pounds. Pretty lean, even at 230. And now I'm about, now I'm a little bit heavier, but I got down to about 169, 170 before the contest.
And you're 6 foot seven in heels?
No, six. I'm 6'1".
That's what your press release says.
I'm actually 6'1".
Okay.
Flat-footed.
Flat-footed.
Flat-footed 6'1". But I started adding the cardio to it, yeah. And for a while that's all I was doing, the cardio. And then I really started adding, there was a girl I was dating at the time when I first started to change, and she was into yoga, so I started yoga. That's the hardest crap in the world. I don't know if you've ever actually done yoga. That thing will kill you. But I learned in there a lot of just some of the poses that helped on stretching. And, you know, I know that there's this big controversy going on right now as far as, you know, plank, is that really good for your abs, or crunches? Well, what I found is that when I was doing the yoga, that I need to really start stretching, because that helps elongate the muscles and it helps pull the lactic acid out. Because really, if you think about it, the reason you're sore a day and a half after you exercise is because you basically ripped all your muscle fibers apart, and it's like a scab on the inside. And so when you go to sleep that night, you know, that scab starts to heal inside the thing, and you get up the next morning, you're ripping that scab apart. So that's basically what's happening. So if you can, before you go to sleep, or the day after you do, like, do legs, because, you know, it's, you do legs on Monday, it's Wednesday morning that kills you.
Leg day, you can barely walk.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're like handicapped
or
something.
The next day after leg day, it's like, I need an extra hour of sleep.
Right. But a really thing that really help you is stretching more, is really helping pull those fibers, because it's just like looking at a piece of meat and steak. You know, the fibers go in one direction. Well, when you're repairing the muscle or tearing the muscle up, the fibers are crossing up. And so that when you stretch, you help try to elongate and bring the muscles back in line, it will help. And I really started to see that. And I also realized that it really started to help on my abs, on doing plank and doing, because I used to do crunches. I don't do crunches anymore at all. Because if you think about it, what does crunches do?
You're flexing and strengthening your core.
You're flexing a muscle.
Yeah, your abdominals.
Which means, what happens when you flex muscles? It gets bigger. I don't want my abs bigger. I've got muscle down there. If you're doing proper squats and techniques, you've built a core if you're not sure. Using the weight. So if you're doing crunches, think about it. You're making your midsection thicker. I have not done crunches in a decade. I do plank. I do elongating, you know, do a little bit of crunches, pulling up from elongated, hanging down. But a lot of it is stretching, plank, side plank, and some yoga poses to help stretch out. Now, diet's the biggest thing.
I've seen some guys at the gym, and they kind of have like a belly, but it's a muscle belly.
It's sticking out.
Yeah.
No, I don't want...
Let's go through some things. I just love talking about fitness with you and bodybuilding. Tofu is overlooked as a protein source.
By who?
By bodybuilders and fitness people. And, you know, it's like when you look at, you know, their Instagram accounts. They're always like,
eat all the animals.
Eat all the animals, but tofu is one of the animals.
Now, are they afraid of it because of the estrogen myth?
Tofu and estrogen, that's completely bogus.
It's very little. I mean, unless you're just eating, that's all you eat is tofu, and it's still going to be so minute, especially if you are a male, they still have your testicles. I mean, it's not going to make a difference. It's a photoestrogen that's very minute.
You know what's really delicious, and this will make all the vegans have a heart attack, is scrambled tofu. Eggs and bacon, because the tofu really absorbs the flavor of the bacon beautifully, and you just really, as a taco, it's unbelievable. What about meal frequency? There's always a lot of controversy. It's calories in, calories out. If it fits your macros, you know, the balance between carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. But some people feel like eating too often is overrated. What do you think about that?
Well, it all really depends on what you're trying to do with your cycle. Are you trying to bulk up? Are you trying to thin out? I assume by the question you're asking, if someone's trying to get more for a summer look or for a pre-contest prep.
So cutting versus bulking.
Okay, yeah. What I have done and what I believe in is the less that you have in your stomach, the better. So I definitely do a lot more smaller meals. I pretty much cut out all carbs. I mean, very little carbs that I eat.
When you're trying to cut.
I'm sorry?
When you're trying to cut.
Pretty much, that's my whole life now.
Oh, all the time.
When I started, after my last contest, I pretty much kind of stayed on that. I'll have little fluctuations, you know, when I go and have a trip or something, a little bit. But I really try to keep low. I mean, cracklin, if y'all even know what that is.
That's fried pig skin.
Yes, exactly. Pork rinds, cracklin.
Chicharrones.
Yeah, chicharrones. There we go.
Yes. President George W. Bush's favorite snack.
In San Diego, it's also our favorite snack. Sour cream, real cheese. Then, of course, chicken, tofu, a little bit of steaks. But even then, it's like I've skipped. I don't eat breakfast anymore. I drink some coffee in the morning. My first meal will actually be some cracklin around 10 o'clock.
When we talked to you, you were taking micro naps?
Micro napping?
Yeah.
Out in the morning, come home, take a nap, work out again, take a nap.
The 15-minute nap several times a day.
Well, it's basically a split session for your rest. I mean, if you think about it. And especially when you're starting to prepare for a contest, you're exhausted. Your body, your mind, you're starving yourself to be able to cut fat so that you really can't do all that anymore. You can't go into the gym and work out for two and a half hours and get your cardio and everything like you can when you're just bulking up. So normally, anyway, I would always break up my cardio. I'd do either cardio in the evenings or the morning and then do my heavy lifting, and I would need to take a nap. And at that time, I was getting ready for my contest. I was back in San Diego, and I was still training. Clients, I had my fitness business, so that I would get up early in the morning, get into my hour of cardio spin, and then I would go train. I had a boot camp at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then I'm tired. I've been up for 3 or 4 hours, and I've already done cardio, and I've worked.
And you haven't eaten.
And I haven't eaten exactly. That's actually when I had my first meal. I would come home and I would cook up some eggs, have a couple eggs, and I would take about a 30-minute nap, and then I would get up. Typically, I had another client somewhere in there. If I didn't, I would go out. My knees are shot from all the football. Yeah. So because you know the difference between walking a mile and running a mile?
No, what is it?
Basically time. Okay. The calorie's about the same.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it really is. There's cardiovascular benefits by jogging, but as far as calorie burns, it's basically about the same. So especially when I first moved to San Diego, I just walk. Because one, I'm getting to meet people, I'm getting out, I'm getting a suntan, and I would walk about an hour in the mornings and an hour in the evenings, and then that's how I did all my cardio. Outside of that, I'd go do the spin first thing in the morning, because my knees could survive through that, just to burn calories.
But I notice you always see these giant bodybuilders at the gym on the treadmill, and they're just doing this very simple walk.
Or they're doing the Stairmaster.
Yeah.
And that's what I do now, mainly the Stairmaster. Yeah, it really does. I mean, you were talking about calories in, calories out. It's still burning calories. It doesn't matter if you just get out and go walk around the neighborhood with your kid or go play volleyball. I mean, anything, any activity, you're burning calories. Mm-hmm. And so even walking on the treadmill, especially when you're 230 pounds and your knees are shot and hurting from squats and everything else you've done, sometimes it just means you walk for an hour, hour and a half on a treadmill.
Foam rolling is overlooked. A lot of people don't do it that know they should do it. They don't do it. And one friend of mine, when he first started foam rolling, he said it felt like it had cardiovascular qualities, because you're circulating the blood inside your muscles by rolling it on a stick, basically.
Well, now, he'd been fun to watch then. I'd like to see what he was doing with it. It is beneficial because it really goes back to what I was talking about earlier on about the yoga poses and stretching I was doing, because that's what that foam roller is doing. It's helped pulling the knots out where your muscles have developed little knots to help elongate and put your muscle fibers back in balance.
Cardiovascular exercise, overrated?
Sex? No.
No.
Wait, I'm sorry. What are you talking about?
Well, some people just like, some people say, I don't do cardio at all. It's calories in, calories out. The people, they call them the cardio goblin, because doing too much cardio will kill your muscle.
When you do cardio, eat your muscle,
it'll
right?
eat your muscle. Say. Yeah. You're doing too much cardio. A lot of people do too much cardio. Is that the case?
Well, I guess you can do too much cardio, but I've never seen anybody do too much cardio because you're basically burning calories. Mm. So I have a
friend who's got chicken legs, little calves, and he says it's because I run, so I can't build up.
No, it's because he's not doing squats and heavy weights because it's hard.
Could you say that, Adam?
Adam, the reason you have chicken legs, because I used to have chicken legs. I know exactly. It's because you're doing the beach muscles on the bench on Mondays instead of starting doing squats on Mondays. And that's when I changed my life. There was one famous thing that Arnold Schwarzenegger said, that he took all his jogging pants and he cut them off to see his chicken legs. That way he forced him to always see how bad they looked. And every Monday, he always did squats. And I changed my whole routine then every single Monday. Or if I miss a couple of days, today was my first day back in the gym in 3 days. I always go back to leg day because it forces you to build those muscles, which really, if you think about it, that's what develops HGH, is your leg muscles. It is a quarter of your body or more is your quads and your hams.
But you could just wear jeans like Hugh Jackman does.
So do you think like doing squats like twice a week is a good thing to do?
Absolutely. Now, it all comes back to our body's the ultimate machine.
Twice a week. Yeah.
Our body is the ultimate machine. It adapts to everything we do to it. So you constantly have to be tricking up your body. Mm. You cannot have the same routine all the time ever. So you can go in there, you know, even myself, I go in there and I have chest and tri, back and bis, leg and shoulders. Well, you can do that for, you know, 3 days, 4 days on, take a day off. You need to have a rest day at least once a week, really. But I do it every 3 to 4 days. I always take a rest day. I mean, I'm pushing 50. So you have to, you know, as you start getting older, your body takes longer to heal. So you need to listen to your body. Take a rest day, but I'll do that routine. And then I will go in there after about 3 or 4 weeks. You have to trick up your body because it starts to adapt to it. I mean, that's the great thing about it. Your body doesn't know that you're on a normal routine or you're stuck on some island where you're not having any food and exercise. So your body always tries to adapt. So by going in there, instead of doing that same routine, I might go in there and do legs and just do squats and just burn my legs out as hard as I can go. Or just all of a sudden, next time I go in there, just do really light weights or throw in, instead of back and I do back and tries. So yes, you do need to be tricking your body. You can't stick to that same routine every single day, every single week.
Diversity is a beautiful thing, both in life, in the work, and in the gym.
And the bedroom.
What about CrossFit? It's a huge controversy between bodybuilders, fitness enthusiasts, and CrossFitters. Some people who swear by CrossFit, they say that saved their life. It got them into the gym. And some bodybuilders like, CrossFit demons, stay away from me, you monsters.
I think CrossFit's a wonderful thing because it goes back to what you're talking about. It's got people back into exercise that didn't do it. There's people that they don't care. They don't want to look like a bodybuilder. They don't want to go into the gym and have the same routine of lifting weights and cardio. And CrossFit offers a variety. It's no different. I mean, look through the last 50 years. We've had jazzercise. We've had, you know, all the different types of exercises.
Aquarobics
that have always come up.
So Prancercise is my favorite. You can search on YouTube, Prancercise. It's skipping and it's done by this
prancing
basically, and instead of jogging at the park, and there's this lovely woman who uses stock music, and it's hilarious. But
do we have footage of Mark doing that?
No, but Mark actually does death drops at the beach. We could prancercise.
You know, actually, we got to do a video of us doing that.
Prancercising.
I'm gonna be here a couple more days.
All right,
there we go.
Well, I'll hold you to that. And last but not least, neck training. Jeffrey Nippard, who's gorgeous, he's a sweetie guy, on YouTube. He's a science-based training. He said that you can really, for men who have very thin necks or trans men who want to masculinize their face, developing the neck muscles. It's very delicate, very hard, very easy to mess things up. But doing some gentle weighted neck training can actually.
Now, they need to have a video showing what you're doing right now.
I look like I'm giving a blowjob to the microphone. But the idea, like a lot of football players like you who have a background, there was your coach probably had you train your necks to avoid injury.
Yeah, no pencil necks, right?
I don't see it anymore, but there actually used to be a machine in the gyms back in the 70s and 80s that was basically looked like you were munching out. Would that be the right way to say it? Yeah. It was a machine that you would put your face into this padded thing, and yes, you would kind of push the, you could adjust weights on there and pushing it.
And it also works on the sides too. You would rotate 90 degrees. And
yes, well, you really do, especially if you're playing linebacker or any type of lineman, you do need a little thicker base on the neck to help on the size and to help support you. You and I were talking about, because I saw your little contraption that you just bought.
I ordered one online to try it.
It looks like a fetish kind of thing.
It looks like some bondage
gear. It's a BDSM headgear. We need a picture of that.
What day is neck day?
What day you do it on back or shoulder day, probably?
No, actually, if you think about it, if you really want to do it on a separate day, then if you're going to add that, I would do that on like a calf day. You know, if you do like calves and abs, I mean, I guess it really depends. Everybody can kind of break it up different.
Sure.
I mean, my routine typically always has been, again, as I was saying earlier, you want to change things up. But I've been doing this since I was 15 years old. So we're looking at almost 35 years. Mm-hmm. And pretty much it's always been, I start off with legs when I go in there. Then the next day is chest and tri, then back and bi. And then leg, and then I do shoulders, abs, and calves. And then I take a day off. So it's four, then one.
And, you know, I always tell people, it's like, there are ideal workout exercises, and then there's ones that fit in with your work week.
Exactly.
And what may be good for somebody who doesn't have to work a 9-to-5 job Monday through Fridays might not be good for somebody who works the second shift at a hospital on the weekends.
Well, it also depends on what you're trying to do. I mean, if you're just trying to have a decent looking body to go to the the beach, mm-hmm. Well, you don't have to break it down that much. I mean, you really could just do an upper body and lower body day. You know, it really comes around. I mean, I'm looking at more as a true bodybuilder that's trying to develop or maybe get ready for a contest where you're really breaking it down to that many minute body parts.
We're running out of time, but I really want to quickly talk about the rise of transgender media personalities in the last 6 years since we met you. I mean, when we first met you, there were really not a lot of people who were trans celebrities or people that were famous because of their visibility as transgender people. You have Janet Mock, you have Laverne Cox.
And
Chaz Bono.
Chaz, I feel like, was just coming to his own when we first started talking to. But now it's, you know, the biggest trans celebrity, of course, is Caitlyn Jenner.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Or villain.
Who?
Trans-villain.
Oh, trans-villain. Okay.
Because she, you know, really, Caitlyn Jenner has done an extraordinary job, I think, in some ways, humanizing trans people, as we are all come in all shapes and sizes, and that sometimes it's, you know, we're not all heroes. Sometimes we're jerks, selfish, arrogant, stupid jerks. And Caitlyn Jenner, you know, despite she really had good intentions with her show I Am Kate, but ultimately revealed herself just to be, and with her endorsement of Ted Cruz and Trump, and most, you know, now maybe this past week with Trump throwing trans military people under the bus, now maybe she's starting to have some second thoughts about it. Like, it took you this long to figure out that Trump was not your best friend?
Well, I think some of it is also, you have to realize, a lot of people, they don't see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about it, that it's also, when you have someone like that, it helped, as I said earlier, about like the Ted Turner's, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Well, it's publicity that's bringing out there, and it's bringing awareness, and it's bringing to the transgender issue. I'm not saying that some of the things that she did are negative. But it really comes back to it's a celebrity that's brought more exposure to the trans community, and see that this is someone who, she at the pinnacle was the ultimate athlete for the United States. And now that even at the age that she's now, this transition. So it's not just some freak that's in some corner wall that they've seen. This is actually someone that
they can't dismiss them.
Well, exactly. Well, it forces people to actually look at it and think about it. Now, do I agree with everything? No, but that's irrelevant. You look at the big picture. It's bringing
I would
more
say that you don't agree with 95% that comes out of Caitlyn Jenner's mouth. Okay, that's early soft pedaling.
I could sit here and toe the line and just try to make this easy and soft. But if you look at some of the things that, the direction that she was trying to go in the Republican Party, it does come back to finances. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it. And so if you have money, why would you want to give more of the money away? And if you have, the way she looks at it, look at the Republican Party is always trying to reduce taxes. And,
so they say.
Well, they're not very.
They reduce taxes on the higher income. It does tax the middle class, but they reduce tax on the higher income, and she's in the higher income status.
I would argue that actually Caitlyn Jenner doesn't benefit from the Republican Party's record on reducing taxes for even wealthy people like herself. The Republican Party is very good at reducing taxes for multinational corporations that make billions of dollars, not millions of dollars.
True. But if you look at it, I don't know for a fact, but I would bet you, and I just know from my own experience,
sure,
most of the time you set up corporations and so that way you don't draw a W-2, you draw a 1099, so that you're drawing corporation dollars versus personal income dollars.
And at the same time, Caitlyn Jenner wanted to sort of increase visibility and equality.
Exactly.
And we talked about this, is that as there's more visibility, it may not always be a step forward in the experience for a lot of transgender people, because they're now being questioned about their gender in communities that normally just took them at face value. And so we've seen a lot of our friends like Tracy Tyler moving to the suburbs of Chicago because she felt like living in the city of Chicago, her gender was always at question by being a large and in charge woman in the suburbs of Chicago. She's not. But now that everybody's sort of much more aware, then her gender identity and experience start being asked about.
I would completely agree. I've noticed myself that just in the past 4 or 5 years, whether it been in the suburbs of Atlanta, in the suburbs of Dallas, and even here in the suburbs of Chicago, that, yes, I'm getting along my everyday fine, and everything's great. And probably most of the people, they do think I'm just some bodybuilding female. And I've even had them come up to and ask me questions. But then all of a sudden, when the thing about Trump comes in the news, or Caitlyn Jenner, or something plabs up, well, all of a sudden, it's like a red light flashing. And all of a sudden, it's questioned. Just like you talked about in the gay community, yes, I walk around there now and you have more breeders that are moving into the gay communities, whether it's San Diego or Chicago, and they assume you are. You get up in the suburbs, they don't even think about it. They don't have a clue until these little controversies pop up.
But when you tell people that you're a bodybuilder, doesn't the muscle act kind of as a way of like throwing their transdar off in some way? They're like, oh, yeah, some people would think she's trans, but she's a bodybuilder.
I would say the only thing, especially in the last few years, because my size is reduced, my voice is about the only thing. Typically, yes, when I'm in suburbia, most of the time, most people, once they even start to talk to me and it comes out, we talk to them and I say that I am, that's what they say is, well, I thought you was a female bodybuilder when we first came up here.
Well, and have you had any like vocal training, or have you consciously worked on the way that you talk at all?
I did when I probably right after my first transition, I tried to just, there was some little coaching things that you could do on the singing, and my singing's horrible. So I did work on a little bit. And I think just the evolution of, I have a good friend of mine who's known me since before the surgeries. And he had told me just in the 5 years, he's seen a huge difference in my mannerisms, the way I walk and I talk. I mean, you cut your nuts off, you're going to walk completely different. I'm just saying. So,
well, because you watched that National Geographic special that you were in, and certainly your voice is very different than it is. And even listen to the first podcast we did with you.
Which we did. You need to put that up on this thing, because I was shocked.
We'll put up
on
a link to it.
I was surprised on how much different I did sound.
Yeah, and one thing that you asked us before we wrap this up, it was in November, and we really connected with you, and we were like going to send you a Christmas card.
The Garrett's popcorn.
You said, I love Garrett's popcorn. Yes. And then we're like, oh, let's send her some Garrett popcorn. And then we looked online.
No,
like,
you made
$60.
Some.
$60 for a modest amount of popcorn. Uh-huh. And we're like, this is popcorn and sugar. How hard can it be to make? So Mark and I took upon ourselves to make you some caramel popcorn at home. And it became addictive.
It was
so addictive.
It's amazing. And yeah. it was actually, that was so sweet of y'all. I remember getting that. And it was really good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was wondering, when are you going to start branding that? We ought to start selling that.
We should sell some more. Listeners, yeah. Would you like to buy some?
Christina Bruce's caramel popcorn with a little something extra. Love.
Well, that had to be up to y'all now. I can't do that anymore.
You don't eat caramel popcorn anymore?
Oh, I thought you said about the extra part. Oh. Actually, that's
extra
funny.
Love.
It does, actually, because I still have a prostate.
Yeah.
It actually, there's, because when they basically make you an outie to an innie, yeah. There's just skin up in there. So I have to use lube, you know, that's going up in there. But actually, once I climax,
yeah.
The prostate actually shoots some stuff out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was at first, I was like, ooh, this is nice. it is a little different.
Well, because that's mainly what the stuff is anyway. Like the sperm content of ejaculate.
Right, most of it.
It's mostly. It's
a semen fluid from the prostate.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too much into your love life, but you're dating somebody quite attractive.
She is stunning, isn't she?
Yeah. You don't fuck ugly, honey.
Hell, I never did. Never will.
How'd you guys meet each other?
And I can't say too much about this.
Sure.
She actually searched me out.
Oh, she found you.
She was a stalker.
Oh, she was a chaser.
Yeah, and she's going to love hearing this, too, because she knows it's true. She saw the National Geographic, when it first aired back in 2012. And then she found that very interesting. She didn't really know much about trans. And then she saw it again about a year and a half ago. And of course, it has my Hillcrest Fitness and Christina Bruce Fitness on there. So she looked me up on Facebook and she started reaching me out. And I used to get that all the time. So I just ignored it at first. But she was persistent as hell, which was very attractive. So after about a month, and I go to Sturgis, the big motorcycle rally every other year.
Yeah.
And so she had she kind of kept on. And at the time I was getting ready for, in Atlanta on the 4th of July, they had the Peachtree Run Race. It's the largest 10K in the world. And it'd be like 30,000 people. So I was getting ready for that. So I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and training in Atlanta because it's so hot to run it. I mean, she was calling me at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So, yeah, so it's, I finally, and what really got it is I was in Vegas with a friend of mine, and she saw it was his birthday, and so I took a picture kind of like hugging him, and I used to wear a ring just to keep people leave me alone, like a wedding ring, yeah. And so she saw that, and she goes, oh, I didn't know you were into guys. Well, she hit my butt, and I go, oh, hell no, I'm not into guys. It's like, so that's what I'll prove it. So, yeah, exactly. So, and that was a little over a year ago now.
How romantic.
So for about a year now, I've been coming up to Chicago, and she comes down to do.
What do you think about it? Like, I mean, there's so many trans media personalities and fitness personalities. I mean, like, just the trans men on the cover of every other magazine, reality TV show, Laith Ashley and the Men's Fitness Health cover. What do you make of all this visibility? Besides, you know, what we talked earlier, it's like, is it easy to sort of get lost in the crowd? I mean, it was such a, you were one of a kind back in your day when you first started.
I used to be special.
Yeah. And now you're just one of
thousands. And now I'm
thousands.
Just Christina Bruce. Actually,
with
it was,
muscle.
After about 2 or 3 years of it, it got old. So I actually took a kind of a hiatus and just kind of, you and I were talking about earlier, I set up a separate Facebook page because it was just getting to be too much. And I kind of like checked out from that and just lived. I mean, I was up in suburbia, like I told you, in Dallas and Atlanta, and just kind of isolated myself from all of it. So even some of the stuff we were talking about earlier was new to me. I really.
Well, isn't it instead of like, it's kind of like binging and purge, but I like to think of it as a sets and rests, you know?
It's like, but like surfing in between the sets.
Yeah, in a sense that, you know, I think everything in life, a cardiovascular and diet and everything, benefits from activity and rest periods.
I think it's a good thing. I do like it. I mean, even the controversy with Caitlin, you know, that comes up, it forces people to talk about it.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or don't like it, you know, the point is it's forcing everyday Joe and Mary Kmart and, you know, Peoria, Illinois to have to talk about it. Oh, how ironic. I'm in Illinois.
Christina Bruce, it's such a pleasure. You're such a lovely person, and we just absolutely adore you, and it's such a thrill for us to hang out with you and to have you on the show in person.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad I got to come here. I can't believe after, what, 6-7 years, I finally got to face to face.
Anytime, darling. Now, if you guys want to stalk Christina Bruce and become her next girlfriend.
You can't.
I'm just kidding.
Don't give me
that
trouble.
Go to ChristinaBruceFitness.com. They can watch the National Geographic special there.
That's me. That's my kind of fitness page that has everything on it. You can find even links from there to my Facebook, Twitter. Everything's on there. So if you go to ChristinaBruceFitness.com, and it does have, yes, the National Geographic Taboo episode.
And right now, you describe yourself as a nomad. The future's wide open for you.
It is. I'm actually considering moving to Chicago. That's kind of what this...
Can you handle our winters?
No. We'll see. That's what terrifies me. My whole entire life, even when I was in corporate America, a couple jobs were offered here, and it was always, nope, I did not move north of I-20. I've lived in Atlanta, Georgia, Dallas, Texas, and San Diego, California.
So you like the heat?
I just don't like the cold.
Oh.
Well, we want to remind people that podcasts like this, Feast of Fun, is made possible because of financial support of fantastic, fierce and fabulous people like you.
The best way to support the show is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus. And remember, your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We really couldn't do it without you.
If you want to listen to Christina Bruce in her young days as a woman, you can go to the site and listen to her original podcast with us and her following podcast, training for her first female bodybuilding competition. And all our archives are available on our website, feastoffun.com. Christina Bruce, I absolutely adore you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoy coming here. It was good to finally meet both of you.
Yeah.
Glad to have you.
So if I move here, does that mean it's going to be like a regular?
Sure. Yeah, let's party.
I want to do the prancing little thing we talked about.
Prancercise. Let's go get some sushi.
Let's do prancing when they're like Christmas. We could have prancing for the different Rudolph and see.
Which one do you want to be? There's Donner and Blitzen and Comet and Cupid.
And something and something. Or Rudolph.
Oh, Rudolph.
The greatest reindeer.
I'll be Dasher.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be the one that nobody remembers their name.
Dancer?
No,
Dasher, Dancer, Comic, Blitzen, Cupid, Donner and Blitzen.
I know Donner and Blitzen is lightning and thunder and lightning in German. Did you know that?
Oh, because they're fast.
Yeah.
But in real life, reindeer make terrible horse.
They don't fly at all.
Horse? Like pulling carriages.
Of course.
Do not attach a carriage to a reindeer. A reindeer will kill you.
I think actually, like up in like Lapland, they actually use them as beasts of burden.
Yeah.
Back in the day, yes.
But I wouldn't feel sad. Those reindeers are
nasty. They pull a cart and stuff.
They will fuck you up. They're not, you know, we think about reindeers as like the animated
little
thing.
Cuties.
Yeah, they're beasts. They're like moose. They'll fuck you up. They will trample over you. Okay, everybody. Bye.
Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.